From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour is being made across our region as employers are preparing their workplaces for reopening. Whether their businesses fall into Phase 1, which opened a week ago, or Phases 2 through 4, many have questions about guidance, regulation, safety, their rights, the rights of customers, and more. It's an unprecedented time, and the details matter. This hour, we're joined by two local attorneys who have been guiding business owners about their reopening plans. They've been answering questions that run the gamut, from PPE and disinfectant strategies to how to take employees' temperatures before they enter a building, to how to redesign workspaces to comply with physical distancing recommendations. A lot to think about and a lot of different flavors of this depending on the industry. They're going to answer our questions. If you have questions in our audience about reopening safely within the law, what you ought to be doing, you can call the program this hour, 844-295-TALK. It's toll-free, 844-295-8255, 263-WXXI if you're calling from Rochester, 263-9994. You can email the program connections at WXXI.org. Hello to our guest. Dan Moore is a partner at Harris Beach and leader of the Harris Beach Labor and Employment Practice Group. Dan, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you, Evan.
And Matt Emmons is with us, Vice President of HB Cornerstone. Matt, welcome. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you so much, Evan.
All right, so Dan, I'm going to start with you. What are some of the most popular questions or concerns you're hearing from business owners and employers when it comes to looking ahead, whenever that green light comes? What are you hearing most often?
Well, thanks, Evan. Well, just as background, in my world, I represent employers on labor and employment issues, and I've been doing so for about 30 years. But right now, we're engaged with our employers and clients in reviewing a lot of issues and considerations that now are coming into focus as our clients are bringing their business back online and their employees back to work. I think two issues in particular are of great concern. First is, how do we bring back our workforce into a safe environment? And I think there's two things driving that. One is, you know, our sense is that businesses are very genuinely concerned that employees are safe. But the other side of that also is that they want to be sure that they're not going to be subject to liability if something goes wrong. And they also want to make sure that they follow all the necessary guidelines and regulations that are out there that are both, you know, emanating from the federal government and from the state government. But the second issue really deals with employees themselves and what fears they may have, whether reasonable or not, when they're coming back to work in this kind of environment. And how do you deal with situations where employees may have already been impacted by the virus, whether that's directly or indirectly? For example, what about employees who may feel they're vulnerable to getting the virus because of a medical condition? So with respect to the first issue, I think the governor has put out extensive guidance on how these industries are expected to come back online. And I think they could probably be summed up in one sentence, which comes directly from the guidance. And that is that each business and industry must have a plan to protect employees and consumers, make the physical workspace safer, and implement processes that lower risk of infection in the business. And so what that means, I think, is that for in this first phase, there are specific guidelines for each different industry, whether it's construction, manufacturing, agriculture, retail trade with curbside pickup, or wholesale trade. And these guidelines generally focus on three areas: people, processes, and places. And so they provide detailed mandatory steps that businesses need to take in addressing things like physical distancing, protective equipment, cleaning and hygiene regimens, screening of employees, communications that need to be made to employees so they know what they have to do to keep the workplace safe. And once all those considerations are taken into effect, the business has to put together a safety plan. Now, that safety plan has to be posted, but it doesn't need to be sent to the, you know, to the governor's office or anything like that. But what a business must do is it must sign an affirmation that it has reviewed the guidance and taken all those appropriate steps. Then on the employee side, I think the issues we're seeing a lot of are the concerns about, you know, compliance with all the new laws that are in play. For example, I think most businesses are aware that there have been a host of laws passed that deal with providing protection to employees who have been impacted by the virus, in many cases providing them with paid leave if an employee is out of work due to some coronavirus issue. And, you know, the extent of the benefit will depend in large part on the size of the business and the need for the leave. And then, of course, there are the other laws that are already on the books that are out there that we have to consider how they relate to the coronavirus. And that they concern, for example, protecting employees who are facing difficult family situations or who themselves may have disabilities already. And, you know, the laws I'm talking about are the New York Paid Family Leave Act, the New York State Human Rights Law, the Family Medical Leave Act, and the Americans with Disabilities Act. All of these laws are, in their own way, connected in how employees need to get back to work in a safe way. So there's a lot to consider, and there's a lot of planning that's going on right now. And when we're talking to our clients, I think we're finding that the clients who put in the most time and effort in trying to get a smart plan in place are the ones that are going to be in the best position to provide a safe workplace for their employees and to avoid liability.
So, but let me hit one point that came up last night in our forum, our televised forum with Bob Duffy, who is advising Governor Cuomo on the Finger Lakes and Rochester region's phased reopening. He brought up the question of liability. And Dan and Matt, I want to make sure I really our listeners understand what we're talking about here. Because, Dan, when you say there are certain things that a business must do, but I think you're emphasizing the same point that Bob Duffy emphasized last night, which is that the state is not going to check your business plan once you're part of a phased reopening. In other words, you can reopen. It doesn't sound like you have to submit a plan, but you need to have a plan. So, Dan, before I roll this sound with Bob Duffy from last night, is it a case of what a business must do or should do?
The guidelines are very clear that the business must have a safety plan. It must post that safety plan, and it must have it available in case it's asked for it by some, you know, the applicable state agency.
Okay, so it is a must, but you're not getting tested before you reopen. Okay.
But you don't have to submit it. What you do have to submit is an affirmation saying that you've read the guidance, mm-hmm. that you know how to comply with it, and that you do have a safety plan. So it's very important that businesses review that guidance very carefully, and it is fairly extensive.
Yeah, fair enough, because last night we had a question from a Phase 4 business owner who said, you know, looking ahead, what should I be doing to get ready? I don't want to just wait until July 1 or whenever the case may be. And I want to play Bob Duffy's response, in which he also does talk about liability and making sure that plan is in place to protect yourself legally. Let's listen.
Don't wait for your phase to come. Get your plan in place now to protect your employees and protect your customers. And go on that website, some great guidance on there, and have that plan in place. And I want to also add, the state is not going to inspect your plan before you open. But what will happen if you have a complaint, if an employee complains, gets sick, God forbid, a customer, somebody is hospitalized? I think we have to look at potential litigation down the road. You protect yourself by taking common sense steps to protect your employees and your customers. And there's many examples on there. There's great examples of plans. You can send an email to me at the Chamber of Commerce. We really have a lot of information to offer people. But that's what I would start doing. And then we're waiting. The governor will make those decisions on the phases, and we'll have very specific guidelines as they come.
That's Bob Duffy. But again, bringing up liability there, Dan and Matt, I'll start with you on this, Dan. Does that make sense to you that, you know, we're imagining a scenario in which someone who I own a store, I own a business, let's say it's phase four, someone who was on my premises a week later tests positive for the virus. I'm not sure they can prove where a virus comes from. I mean, there's community spread going on. I personally think that's just my lay opinion. It'd be very hard to do that. But if they want to do that, if they want to say, hey, I think I got sick at your store, what Bob Duffy seems to be saying is you better have a plan that indicates you followed all the guidelines, that you took what you need to do very seriously. Everyone's been trained on it. And that will not only help you stay reopened, but it'll help you not get sued. Does that make sense to you, Dan?
Absolutely. And I think what Bob Duffy is really talking about is the fact that if you have the plan and comply with it, you have some evidence now that you've demonstrated a good faith effort to provide as much protection as you can for consumers and your employees. And I suspect that if anybody gets the virus at your facility, the first thing the Department of Health or the Department of Labor will be doing is looking at your records, see what you've got in place, see how you've been complying. And if you haven't been, you may face some penalties from state agencies. And you also now have some bad evidence in the record, and you're right, it is difficult to prove causation in these kinds of cases. But if a third party comes onto your premises and you have not been providing reasonable care in complying with guidelines, that could be some evidence that you could be liable to them as well.
Matt, you want to add to that?
Evan, I'd love to. Thanks. I know you didn't mean that to be a segue, but that Bob Duffy quote was, and what he said last night, I was able to tune into that, and I made notes on that from last night. It's a great segue for me because Dan's already touched on the state guidelines and the mandates, right? And we need the attorneys to give us the liability on that. And one correction, Evan, is I'm actually not an attorney. My background is in architecture and construction, and HB Cornerstone is a subsidiary of Harris Beach, just so I don't get in trouble with the attorneys. HB Cornerstone is doing is we're, as an owner's representative firm and an experienced design team, we've been working with clients not only to help develop but also implement their back-to-work plans and policies. In some instances, we're actually members of their COVID-19 response teams, along with legal, HR, management, facilities, and other consultants. And those plans, just what you're referencing there, that safety plan template, it's a template. I would almost view it as a base checklist and a guide. And then what we're doing is we're actually, like I said, we're actually helping them develop and implement these plans. So how are we doing that? We're reviewing, their businesses, and we're identifying areas of risk by developing risk overlay plans. And those plans help us identify high, medium, and low-risk areas. We're also looking at high-risk intersections and reviewing potential one-way traffic, in certain corridors or entrances. We're developing occupancy analysis plans. What those do, Evan, is they help us identify if there's going to be any occupancy limitations. We heard about that last night, too, and that was with the restaurant and the issues with her seating, right? So those are the kinds of things that we're looking at. We're also using those plans to then work with the businesses to determine what physical improvements could they make to maximize the use of their existing space in that building. We're also looking to reduce touch points, confirm that 6-foot social distancing, or Evan, as you refer to it, as 6-foot physical distancing, which mm-hmm. I actually like. That sounds better, and it makes more sense to me. We're reviewing... OSHA and CDC refers to these terms, engineering controls and administrative controls. So we're reviewing engineering controls or physical improvements with these clients to see if, and that's making a physical modification like a plexiglass divider at a reception area or at office cubicles, similar to what you're seeing at a grocery store or banks. And then there's administrative controls. Example of that would be if we do these plans with these businesses and they determine that they can't put an engineering control in place or, a physical barrier, or it's too expensive and it doesn't work for their business, then we have to implement an administrative control. An example of that would be a conference room in a business, a place of business, where, as we know in phase two, professional business is opening up, right? Services businesses. So pre-COVID, that conference room may seat 12 to 14 people, but right now it may only be able to safely seat 4 to 6 people. We're just looking at reducing touch points, making modifications where they make sense, and we're helping these clients prepare their physical workspace for a safe reentry, and that's one of the things that we're, uniquely positioned to help do.
And sure. And Matt, as we go throughout this hour, I know we've got specific listener questions that I think will move into some of those individual points on how to do this and what it ought to look like, or just some thoughtful ideas about doing it right. And I'll take this opportunity to grab our first phone call because I think it dovetails with some of what we heard in last night's forum as well. This is Marie in Fairport. Go ahead, Marie.
Hi. I was looking one Sunday for a place to shop, places that look like they would be safe for me. I just swung by Walmart in Victor, and half the people coming out of there had no masks. Half the people going in had no masks. So I asked the person out there from Walmart if they require them. The sign said they did, and he says, yes, but we're not enforcing it. We're not the police. Okay, so then I went to Home Depot around the corner, about a mile away. They were washing the carts. They had distancing. They were restricting the number who could access. People had to have a mask on. They were all waiting outside, ready for entrance. I mean, so with the spotty enforcement, you'll get spotty results. And I don't understand Walmart, who's been open all this time, can't staff up and provide some enforcement. I could not go in Walmart. I could go in Home Depot.
I think, Marie, it's a very important question, and I'm really glad you called. Thank you.
Thank you.
So let me turn it over to first to Dan Moore. I've got questions for both of our guests on this in different ways. Dan, as an attorney who can maybe address some of this, Marie's question is as a shopper. We had a business owner question, Nita Brown, who's got a place on Park Avenue, a small shop. She's concerned as a business owner, do I have the right to tell customers you can't be in the store without a mask? We've seen viral videos this week, Costco, other places, essentially asking people to leave for not wearing masks, and things got a little heated. I don't think that's most Americans, but it is happening at certain places. So let's talk about what the law says. Let's take it first from the owner perspective, and then we'll move into Marie's question. But if I'm a business owner, do I have the right to tell customers you can't be in here if you don't have a mask? Get out of here.
Well, Evan, I think in New York, it's pretty clear that if you are going to come into a retail space, even as a member of the public, you are required to wear a mask. Now, interestingly, that instruction from the governor does have a provision that states that if you have some sort of condition that doesn't allow you to wear a mask, some kind of medical condition, the store owner is not, or the whoever is serving you is not allowed to dig into that and say, well, you better produce a medical document so I can, I have some proof that you really can't wear a mask. But other than that, that's the only case where masks are not required to be worn. But in every other case, if someone is not wearing a mask and you have every right not to let them into your store.
All right. And Matt, when we think about how we're creating space, we probably all can think of businesses that we've been in the last couple of months that have markings on the floor that indicate distance,
right,
or where customers need to be, even when you're in line to check out at the grocery store, those kinds of things. Are those going to be permanent fixtures? Do you think that's a wise start? Is there more that can and should be done?
Yeah, absolutely. One of the things when we're helping develop these return to work plans, for these different types of businesses, we're getting emails and communications daily, on what different manufacturers and vendors are developing these different COVID type tools. And one of the big things too is the signage, right? Is signage and communication is going to be key. And as part of these return to work plans, I know in phase two with some of our clients that we're working with that are businesses, they're trying to communicate. They have to communicate this to their employees, and they're doing that through, specific communications, whether it's a PowerPoint presentation or a webinar that they need to attend prior to returning to work. And then also we're seeing, we're working with these groups to work on the placement of these signs. And what should the sign say? Is it graphic? Is it, does it have, more words on it? What are we trying to communicate, and where do we need to communicate it? And those are the types of things that we're finding are helpful, and we're helping those clients think through that. So in the case of a store, seeing these things, I think it's something that's going to become a new norm, is seeing those things as you enter a store, giving you direction on how things are to be used and not used. Definitely see that.
Yeah, I think it's logical, makes sense to me. And Dan, on the legal side of things, now I want to think about Marie as a customer. In so many ways, I keep thinking about what Governor Cuomo has repeatedly said, what Dr. Michael Mendoza said on our program last night, which is that the authorities can set the phase reopenings, the authorities can set the guidelines, but it is really up to society to behave the way that we should during a pandemic, and to take care of each other, to be respectful of each other. And, the governor said, if 19 million people don't want to wear a mask, I can't make them wear a mask. You can't arrest everyone if 19 million people are not going to wear a mask. At the same time, someone like Marie can say, look, I'm concerned about my health here. And the guidelines and essentially the law seems clear that if I go to a store, and especially if it's indoors, people should be wearing masks. And while she can understand that it's difficult to enforce, can she demand that a store enforce it? Could she sue a store if she ends up sick and she was shopping in a place that was not enforcing it? What do you think, Dan?
Well, Evan, again, my area is labor and employment, and if it was an employee, then you'd have considerations like the workers' comp law that might come into play to protect the employer. But in a case where Maria is coming into Walmart, and Walmart is not in the hypothetical that Walmart may not be following all the guidelines specifically, that may well be a good basis for a claim against the business. Because, and my sense would be, you know, if a business is not complying because they don't want to police things and that sort of thing, they'll start complying once a lawsuit is brought and they have to, you know, they suffer liability and maybe a big verdict in the event that a person gets sick from their failing to follow guidelines in their own store. If that happens, I suspect that we'll see a lot more compliance much more quickly.
Okay. Maria, I hope that helps you. And, you know, maybe Dan is the best course of advice for customers who are uncomfortable to try to talk to people who are in charge of businesses, maybe directly but kindly at first, just to see if you can get the kind of response you want. I mean, if I told the manager of a store, look, I respect your business, I want to be here, but you're not doing enough to make me feel safe. I mean, is that a good first step before things kind of escalate beyond there?
Yeah, I think that probably makes a lot of sense. And if, you know, once the business responds to that, if you're still not satisfied, then you bring it to the attention of the Department of Health or the County Health Board. Either way, I think once there are enough complaints out there, then maybe you're helping that business in a lot of ways protect itself from liability. But if they're still not going to comply, then maybe the next step is, you know, you just have to take legal action.
Okay. Let me get back to your phone calls. Jane in Rochester next. Hi, Jane.
Hi, Evan. I'm going to talk about something that I believe was on the radio a couple of weeks ago, and it was Mitch McConnell who had a bill, and part of it was that he was threatening no more stimulus if this bill does not go through, which is what they do. They put a gun to your head, so to speak, when they want their way, and they want it right now. But the bill consisted of no lawsuits with anything to do with the coronavirus. None. No responsibility is what he's saying if it damages your health or whatever else. And I don't know what happened to that. I haven't heard. Maybe some people just kind of told him where he could go with that. But no lawsuits. And they're not, I've got all these notes trying to remember all that he said, but that they are immune from lawsuits. So, and maybe some people on your panel know about that. In addition to that, you know that Trump is trying to, McConnell, to smash the FDA and OSHA. So somebody said, well, if you got damaged, you know, we have OSHA to protect. I don't know how far that's gotten as far as these protections that we've had, how far along they've gone to smash them. But that was what I heard. It was probably on NPR. McConnell talking about you will not sue if you are damaged by medication, which he's invested in, and so on and so forth. So just help me out here if you can to get that a little bit more clearly understood for myself.
Jane, thank you. I don't know. Dan, do you?
Well, I don't know where the legislation is right now. I think what the concern that is behind that legislation is that businesses are, you know, have already felt the impact of this virus. When they're coming back online, they want to be careful about what they would consider to be frivolous lawsuits. But on the other hand, as the caller says, if a business does not comply with the guidelines, if the business, you know, is not acting in good faith, then as far as third parties go, it would seem that that would just be a simple matter of their negligence, which would, you know, under the common law, be actionable for a claim if someone is injured or damaged. Now, with respect to employees, that's a little different because in New York State, there's a workers' compensation law, so that if, for example, a worker gets injured because he can prove that, you know, the workplace, we were negligent in not complying with all the guidelines in the workplace, that the workers' comp law is there to protect the employer in that situation. Now, what I don't know the details of the legislation that's been proposed on the federal side, I suspect that, at the end of the day, there will be some compromise where there may be some protections, but there has to be a good faith showing by the business or the employer that they have complied with or in good faith tried to comply with the relevant regulations and guidelines.
Okay. Jane, thank you for the phone call. Tom on Facebook got a question, and I think it really applies to both of our guests. He says, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think if a customer has a physical reason that they cannot wear a mask, the business has to make accommodations. This can mean bringing something out to them, etc. It doesn't mean the business has to let you in to shop. On the legal side, Dan, is that correct?
Well, that's an interesting issue because under the federal law, that's absolutely correct, and that applies. For example, in the circumstances where an employee can't wear a mask, you have to try to get to some kind of accommodation where you can get things done. Now, I think from what the caller says here, that it's certainly the best practice to provide that accommodation by saying, look, if you want to come in the store, we'll accommodate you. But the way we'll do it, if you can't wear a mask, is that we'll bring the groceries out to you or the items out to you. But that may not be a good accommodation in all cases, because if the person wants to shop, then there may be an issue. So what happens in that sort of situation? Well, certainly the business has a right to say, you could be presenting a danger to our other customers and our employees, so we're not going to let you in. But then the customer may say, well, you know what, if you do that, I'm going to sue you because you have not provided a public accommodation to me because of a disability. So they'd have a claim under the New York State Human Rights Law. So how does that come out? Hard to say. But I think the best advice would be, one, it's clear that you cannot ask the person for proof of their disability that would not allow them to wear a mask. So you can't do that. But two, I think the caller makes a very good point. If you can try to work out a situation where they can be accommodated, that would be the best result. But at the end of the day, if you forbid them from coming into the store and they're telling you it's because it's of a medical situation, it's a double-edged sword. You could be liable because you haven't provided a public accommodation with somebody with disability. But then if you let them in the store and somebody gets hurt because of it, you may have liability there too. So it's there are a lot of no-win situations with this virus.
Matt Emmons, this is where I think the creative solutions that businesses need to come up with comes into play here. And how do you advise them on dealing with this?
Yeah, absolutely. This is from the practical side, and we heard Janine talk about this last night. Business owners, in her restaurant, as an example, we talked about, I won't name specific companies, but other businesses that the earlier caller mentioned, shopping stores, are making accommodations, right? It's about customer service because they want their business to survive. And they have to come up with solutions that help them overcome these obstacles, right? And we talked about an engineering control or administrative control. And I think, if they can't get that person in the store, they can't wear a mask, and they're going to be buying something and supporting your business and helping reopen the economy and help the general public in general, then there's going to be accommodations, whether that's brought out to your car, there's a curbside pickup. All businesses are making these accommodations right now for the good of, the economy, for the good of their own business, and just for the good of, the people, right? Everyone's trying to work together here and use common sense to come up with safe alternatives to make things work.
Listeners have been hitting us with a lot of very interesting questions, and we're going to be able to work through a number of them. I've got some space, but I've got some really good questions for our two guests talking about preparing your workplace and what we ought to know as employers, as employees, and as customers. If you've got questions or comments, 844-295-TALK is the number. 844-295-8255. 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester. 263-9994. You can email us, connections@WXXI.org. Dan Moore is a partner at Harris Beach and leader of the Harris Beach Labor and Employment Practice Group. Matt Emmons is vice president of HB Cornerstone. And we're right back to your questions next. Coming up in our second hour, owners and innkeepers from the bed and breakfast industry talking about what they're doing to prepare for an abbreviated season. If they get the green light to open, perhaps sometime this summer, would you book with them? Would you stay with them? Would you feel comfortable? They're hurting. It's an industry that could be right on the edge this year, and we're going to talk about what it takes to travel safely coming up. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Jackson writes to us and asks, is there discussion of ventilation considerations for workplaces and retail? You can keep people farther apart in a conference room or cubicle farm, but everyone's potentially still breathing the air for hours or circulating infected air past other workers. That's from Jackson. I'm going to start with Matt Emmons on this one, but I will also say that, you know, the emerging research on this, and we ought to really just do our best to kind of keep in touch with the latest of what we know. The latest of what we know is, I mean, if we can be outdoors, it's a better option than being indoors. And if you're indoors, there may be better options than others based on certain circulation of ventilation and more here. So, Matt Emmons, starting with you, what is the consultation that you're giving when you talk about design modifications for conference rooms, cafeterias, common areas, thinking about these kind of challenges?
Yeah, so let me touch on the HVAC portion first, Evan, because that is a tough one because, you know, we don't have Dr. Mendoza here and we also don't have an actual, you know, licensed engineer on the call. But the things that we're seeing and hearing, we know that landlords and other building owners are looking at upgrading the filters. However, my general understanding of it is that, you know, the filtration of the air and the distance that it would have to go, it's not likely that it would carry through an HVAC system. And we, as you outlined earlier, and we heard today from Governor Cuomo about wearing the mask, it's really more about person to person. And also the other thing too that we've heard is about the surfaces, right? Cleaning of surfaces, which we all know is important no matter what. However, that doesn't seem to be potentially, according to the new CDC information they released the other day, that's really how it's not really coming from that, but they're not really saying that either. So the HVAC thing, we're seeing landlords actually upgrade their filters to a higher level MERV rating and whatever that system can accommodate with a thicker filter. They're also, we did hear that filtration that will actually help with it is things you would see in a medical setting, in a hospital or a doctor's office that has some type of high level HEPA filtration. So that's what we know about the HVAC portion of it. In terms of the common areas, once again, we talk about the engineering controls, the administrative controls. So we have clients that have determined that they're not going to use, when they start to reopen, not only are they in a phase, but they're also staging their reopening, right? We've talked about businesses just because they can reopen doesn't mean they will that certain day. They're putting these plans in place. And one of the things they're looking at is how they can or can't use common areas. So certain things in common areas where they may say, we can sit 100 people in here, but now safely we can only fit, 40. So they may actually remove chairs from that area and only allow 40 people in there. However, what we are seeing a lot of people saying is in common areas, just because there is a risk of close interaction or intersections, is that they're going to, they are asking or they will be having their employees wear masks in common areas.
All right. Dan Moore, is there a legal aspect of this?
Well, only a best practices one. Again, I think when all else fails, we go to the guidelines that the governor's office has put out with respect to opening businesses. And there are guidelines that talk about ensuring that, to the extent possible, you open outside doors and windows to increase circulation. And that's always, something that comes into play when considering bringing your workforce back. But if you can't do that, the other options are to try to stage your return so that, there are not, as many people as typical in your workplace at the same time. And as Matt discussed, the business has a plan, will have to have a plan that can separate and distance people as much as possible. But that is going to be an issue that could be a problem for businesses, especially, when phase two comes into play. I think you're right, Evan, that ventilation is a very, very important issue. And how businesses deal with it, I think, is going to depend in a large degree on guidance that will come down the road as we have more information about it.
All right. Listeners, 844-295-TALK. If you've got legal questions that you continue to want answers on, and we've had a number of questions that I think our guest briefly touched on, but let's hit this a little bit more here. Employees who are worried about going back to work, you know, either because of their own concern, perhaps age or pre-existing conditions, or because they are, you know, living with someone who are they're concerned about. Let's start with you, Dan Moore. What should we be thinking about? What does the law tell us about reopening in different phases? But you've got employees who say, you know, I can't do what I did before. I can't do it in that space.
Okay. Well, I think here it's it really is going to come down to whether the employee can really show that they have a condition that may make them vulnerable to returning to a workplace that has a number of people. And I think the very considerations under the Americans with Disabilities Act and the New York State Human Rights Law that come into play ordinarily would apply here. So, for example, if the employee says, look, you know, I've got this condition. I have asthma or OPCD or a lung issue, and I have a doctor's note that says I can't be near other employees, I think in that situation, there is protection for that employee. The Americans with Disabilities Act, as I say, would basically put it on the employer to work with that employee to find a reasonable accommodation. Now, all the guidance is all about trying to get the employee back to work if possible. So if there are ways you can accommodate that employee by having them work alone or providing protection in the workplace, that's great. And if that works out, then, you know, and the doctor is satisfied that the employee is safe, then you're fine. But in some cases, you know, in manufacturing, for example, where you're working, you have to work close to another employee on an assembly line, let's say, the accommodation may well be that the employee has to take unpaid leave. And in that circumstance, you know, the obligation of the employer is to try to hold the job open for that employee for as long as they reasonably can without creating an undue burden. And now, then you have the situation where the employee can't get a doctor's note, but just themselves feel as though they have, you know, they don't want to be in this environment. And there, I think the employee has less protection because an employer does have the right to, you know, get an individualized assessment of that of the employee to find out whether or not that, you know, they need an accommodation. But if the employee just can't get one, let's say it's an employee who's a little older. And just has a fear about coming to work, in that situation, there's less protection. I mean, our advice is to try to work in the same way if you can with that employee. But the bottom line is that, you know, they probably don't have the same level of protection under the ADA or the New York State Human Rights Law.
All right. Back to your phone calls. Bob in Penfield next. Go ahead, Bob.
Hi. It's a fascinating topic. I hear a lot of the key word here is guide and guidelines. I'm wondering, you know, we're talking about lawsuits and stuff like that. Where's the law that tells me I need to adhere to a guideline? There's no law that says you have to shop in Walmart.
Okay. Dan, do you want to hit that?
Sure. Well, you know, again, if we're dealing with employer-employee situations, then employers are required to review the guidance, affirm that they read it, that they've read it and complied with it, and put together a plan that they have that shows that they are complying with it. And if they are inspected by the Department of Health or Department of Labor and found not to be in compliance, then they could face penalties. Now,
if
in terms of the consumer...
I'm sorry. Yes. Please continue with about the consumer. This is my issue is about the consumer end.
I understand. Okay. So in the situation where a consumer comes into a business and that consumer is concerned because the business is not following this guidance that's been out there and somebody gets hurt as a result, in other words, that, you know, everybody in the store is not wearing masks and there's a number of people who have the infection, worst case, let's say, and somebody is, you know, infected as a result and suffers serious injury, then in that circumstance, you know, you can, the consumer could say, look, you know, there is a common law duty to protect somebody coming in onto your premises. And because you did not abide by that common law duty or you did not follow that duty, you breached your obligation to me, and therefore you've been negligent, and I have the right to sue you and collect damages. Now, how that lawsuit would come out, who knows? I mean, there's a lot of issues there about causation. Can you really prove causation in that sort of situation, that this action by the business owner caused that person an injury? Very hard to show, but it's certainly something that if I was a business owner, I wouldn't want to have to deal with, not just because of the potential liability, but also because of the incredibly negative publicity that would arise.
Does that make sense to you, Bob?
That does. That just tells me that the store owner right there has the right to turn away a customer.
Yeah.
If a customer doesn't feel comfortable in their store, they should not go in it.
Okay. Right. And if you're absolutely right. If the store owner doesn't, see somebody coming into the store that could present a danger to his employees, his or her employees, or his or her customers, they have every right to keep that employee from entering the store, for sure. The only issue we were talking about before was that if the employee or if the customer is not wearing a mask, and you say, well, you can't come in here because you don't have a mask, and the person says, well, it's because I have this medical condition. The guidance the government has provided states that you cannot ask that person to prove that. And so there may be an issue that, in that situation, the consumer has a protection from the New York State human rights law to be in the store and be served. But then again, the store owner has the right to protect his customers and his employees. So, that how that comes out, I don't know. It should be interesting.
But, Dan, the consumer does not have the right to say, freedom, I'm not wearing a mask because I'm an American. That's not the same.
Well, I mean, they can say that. But on the other hand, you can say, freedom, I own this store and I'm not going to let you in. So,
that's right.
You're free to go outside, but you're not free to come in the store that I own.
Freedom is beautiful. Jim in Irondequoit next on the phone. Go ahead, Jim.
I'm confused as to how any bar could remain open.
What? I'm sorry. What?
I don't know how bars can remain open given what I'm hearing.
Why is that?
Are you proposing that everyone in a bar is going to wear a mask?
I think that part of the question is a fair one. But let's have both Dan and Matt address that. Stay in the line, Jim. Start with you, Dan.
Well, first off, I think when we get to that phase where restaurants and bars are open, we'll see what the guidance says. I can't predict that, but my best guess is they're going to say that individuals do not have to be wearing a mask if they're socially distant. In other words, if you put, tables far enough away where you're more than 6 feet, then a mask isn't going to be required.
At a bar. I'm talking about a bar.
At a bar.
I have to stop you. Not a restaurant. Right. A bar where you have people sitting at a bar next to each other watching TV, having drinks. They have to be 6 feet apart is what you're saying.
I don't know. It will depend on what the guidance says, but I think at least initially that may be the guidance to start with. But as things get better, as metrics improve, then that maybe that distance decreases. We'll have to see. Hard to predict on that issue. I know it's a tough one for bar owners for sure.
Sure. And Matt Emmons, let's let Matt jump in here, Jim, and then we'll follow up with you. Go ahead, Matt.
Okay. Yeah, I mean. So, Jim, I think, what you could see is that, back to some of the simple things that we're implementing here is if you aren't able to be 6 feet apart, you may have to wear a mask. And what they may do with those seats is they may say if there's, 15 seats at your favorite bar, they may space those out 6 feet apart. They may use some of the signage and graphics, Evan, that we mentioned earlier, with maybe some queuing and staging on the floor. And then they may also have some signage on the bar about how you're able to, order a drink or transact with that bartender and interact with that, bartender. But I could see spaced out seating working, something like that. It goes back to some of the points we heard last night. That business has to, determine whether or not that's a viable business option for them and it's going to work for them.
So, Jim, there's a couple there's a couple things here. I mean, I'm with you on how challenging it's going to be for bars. But I also think that it's not necessarily impossible, and we're entering a beautiful weather period. So when we see bars having a chance to reopen, my guess is you're going to see them putting a lot more people outside, which is a good scenario. It's better than indoors. And, you know, I think if it comes down to us as customers, I'm talking to you right now through a mask. You probably hear me just fine. I just threw the mask on just for this part of the conversation, just to demonstrate. We can actually talk. Now, I can't drink through a mask, but if I pull my mask down, I can drink a beer, and then I can pull the mask up back up and talk.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy. Look, the elephant in the room here is, what's the expiration date on this?
The expiration date on this is probably when, you know, good guidance tells us, you know, not to do it. I know it's hard, but, I mean, there are also people who have sacrificed in very different ways. I mean, this sacrifice of wearing a mask doesn't feel all that much of a sacrifice to me.
I'm sure it doesn't. I'm sure to you it doesn't. I wouldn't expect any different.
I don't know what that means.
What do you mean you don't know what that means? Go ahead.
Jim, I'm listening. Why is wearing a mask a sacrifice, like an untenable sacrifice?
I think you're building a high-rise on a foundation of sand. I don't think you're having any conversations regarding the shallow nature of this entire thing and what an overreaction it is when it comes right down to it.
Okay. Again, I'm listening. I also know from the experts that one of the most common ways to spread a virus is to be in close contact with someone, especially indoors, for extended periods of time without masking.
It's irrelevant. That's irrelevant for my point. My point being the nature of the virus itself and in regards to its danger. That, I think, has been extremely over-exaggerated. And the framework that's being discussed endlessly here in mainstream news is sickening. And the average person can see through it. And I don't. And when I say I don't expect you to see it any differently, I don't, because you're in it. You're a part of it. I know it sounds accusatory in some sense, but it's a fact.
No, I'm listening. I promise you, I'm listening.
Okay. And I'm glad.
No, I don't take offense to that. I mean, we all have to be critical of one another and try to do better.
I think the average person listening to this would agree with me in the sense that this is insanity. And it's an overreaction to the nth degree, and it goes back to, I think, what I said about building on a foundation of sanity. When you consider everything that's being suggested and talked about, and the lack of a expiration date for all of it, is extreme reason for people to pause or to look at it and pause and say, "Well, wait a minute, what are we really reacting to here? What's really the danger of what's been going on?" And I don't think that's discussed nearly enough.
Well, Jim, I do appreciate the call, and let me just say this. I think reasonable people can debate how long business closures should go on. Different states are doing different things, and I think there are reasonable debates about that. I am not in the camp of stay closed forever, not at all. I mean, in fact, that's one of the reasons Dan and Matt are on the program today. It's one of the reasons we had the program last night. It's one of the reasons yesterday we talked to business owners about creative reopening. I am in the camp that says wearing a mask is pretty much the least you can do. And 5 to 10 times more deadly than the flu without a vaccine means we're going to pass 100,000 dead in this country next weekend with 2 months of massive mitigation efforts. 100,000 dead. I don't think there's any doubt how many more people could be dead if we didn't do that. But reasonable people can disagree on how long we do this or what we do next. And I just want you to know, Jim, I'm listening. You know, I know you sort of view me as part of an ecosystem that's kind of promoting something that is over the top and draconian. I don't seek to be anything other than learning and open to conversation. So in our last maybe 45 seconds apiece, Dan Moore, what do you want to leave the audience with as we try to make these strides together? We try to reopen. We want to support businesses. We want to go out. We want to patronize them, and we want them to respect us. What would you say as some closing remarks, Dan?
Well, just to close, thanks very much, Evan. I think that the bottom line is that as far as businesses go, planning is everything, and trying to avoid having their employees or customers hurt or injured is obviously a high priority. The more they plan, the better they'll protect their employees and customers, and the better their chance of avoiding liability.
And Matt Emmons, some final thoughts from you there.
Yeah, thanks, Evan. You know, just to echo Dan, I thanks so much for having us on today. Really appreciate it. And, you know, one of the things people always ask me is, what do you do? And as a project manager and owner's rep, we solve problems for our clients. And right now, that problem that we're trying to solve is, how do we help them safely return back to work? And that's what we're working on right now. And we continue to hope to, you know, doing that and get back to work here and get back to some kind of new normal.
So HB Cornerstone, by the way, has its list of recovery readiness. They're among a number of groups that are trying to help advise businesses preparing your workplace for reopening. Matt, where can people find it?
That's actually, you can go to the Harris Beach website. We have a COVID page at harrisbeach.com, and you'll see also the link to all of the HB Cornerstone and other COVID-19 updates.
Matt Emmons is Vice President of HB Cornerstone. Matt, thanks for the guidance, and I know we'll talk again. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Dan Moore, partner at Harris Beach and leader of the Harris Beach Labor and Employment Practice Group. Thank you, Dan.
Thank you.
All right, short break. More connections coming up.